Mics are live. All right. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting for what I'll call an inquiry into a rail service in the state of North Dakota. It's approximately 5 minutes after one on Thursday, August 7th. I'm joined by my colleague, Commissioner Crispin. Commissioner Fedorchak is not joining us. Ironically enough, at the same exact time that we scheduled this hearing, Senator Hovind and the head of BNSF, Matt Rose, are meeting in Fargo. And so we figured we would need to split the commission. Commissioner Fedorchak is in Fargo right now representing us in that venue. And Commissioner Crispin and I, of course, are here. And so I have a few comments, but I'll hold those till after I hear from my colleague. If you have any opening remarks, Randy?
Well, I do. Since we met in, I forget the date exactly, late April. Are we dealing with both at once, or are we?
No, I guess I'll set that up. Maybe I will make my comments to kind of fill in some of the gaps. And
that was just the one.
Yeah.
Thing.
I guess what I would like to do, Commissioner, is that we schedule both of these for the same time. And going forward, what I want to make clear is we break these out into two separate cases, if you will. One dealing with BNSF, one dealing with the CP. In the past, we talked, we had both the main lines in there and the short lines. We've now narrowed the discussion down to the main lines, the class ones, I guess. So I want to break them apart at this point. So I would hope to do all of BNSF today and then take a break and then have CP up. And then what I would say, though, is the issues for both parties, from my viewpoint, that I was hoping to talk about is, it's always a question in people's mind of what jurisdiction the Public Service Commission has on railroads. For me, I break it like this, is that it's our job to represent shippers that are being treated unfairly. You could call them captive shippers. You could call them what you would like. So the goal that I want to get out of this meeting today and perhaps future meetings is to get a feel for, to make sure that the ag producers are being treated the same as the oil producers, the same as the coal producers, the same as the ethanol producers, because we've had a lot of focus on ag versus oil, but it's also there's coal products that are being delayed as well as ethanol. And so that's what I hope to get out of this, particularly an update from our meeting that we had in April. And then going forward, I think the commission will have a decision to make whether we're satisfied with the direction it's going or we feel it's time that we exercise our right, our responsibility to make sure all shippers are treated fairly. So that's kind of the setup for me, I guess, Commissioner Crispin, what I was hoping to accomplish for each one of these. And then afterwards, we'll have a work session of, okay, what do we think about what the BN told us today? What do we think about the CP told us today? And then I'm guessing each one will probably have a little bit different thoughts. Okay. So,
well, since that April meeting, we've requested some information. The STB has been gathering some information that I've tried to watch and monitor. I will say I think BNSF seems to be providing more information and more useful information than CP. However, I appreciate that. I'm not happy that the goal that was laid out to have this backlog taken care of by late July is not accomplished. And what kind of bothered me probably the most was our request for information was disregarded in the way that it was. And I'm not going to read this quote exactly because I'm cutting the sentence in two, but the point is here that the request seems to have a mistaken view that BNSF is skewing its allocation of resources and service toward shipment of non-ag commodities. And I work very hard here, and as I do believe both of my colleagues do, to come into these things with an open mind. But what we have here is a situation where I understand the Staggers Act and the, I forget the initials, the Act in the 90s, have in fact pushed a lot of the regulatory authority to the federal government. But there are some other common carrier obligations that I believe that the railroads have. And we hear at worst anecdotal evidence from ag producers and from grain dealers that the service is horrible. And when we can't get the information that we ask for, then that's all that we have to work with, is that anecdotal information from them. And if the railroads are just going to snub their noses at us and say, well, we are dealing with the STB, that makes it very hard on this end. And so I just think that more open, useful information would help everybody to reach what I think all of our goal is to provide good service to all commodities. And so hopefully we can move toward that in the starting today and on into the future.
Okay. Anything else for real comments, Commissioner?
No.
Opening? John, if you want to just turn the mic on, identify yourself, and we'll turn it over to you, and then we'll take whatever time it needs and have questions, and then we'll go from there.
Is it on now?
It should be on. Steve, are we hearing that okay?
Good.
All right.
Chairman Kalk and Commissioner Christman, for the record, my name is John Olson. I'm an attorney here in Bismarck, and I'm here on behalf of Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad. Brian Sweeney would normally be present today, but he's out of state, in fact, out of his home state of Minnesota on other matters. And anybody else that could have been here would have been here, but they are tied up with other matters too, including Matt Rose, who's in Fargo today, with some other principals from BNSF. I think they're going to be here tomorrow to participate in some discussions. I am not the operations expert for the railroad, but I am carrying with me today some materials that I hope will shed some light on where we are at the current time in terms of the past due cars that we're talking about in terms of the grain shipments. I passed out a packet of materials, and there's really three parts to it. The first is a letter from Brian Sweeney. And the second part is a three-page report current to date, or as of recent date, July 24th of this year, on an update on the grain cars and what the forecast is and so forth. The third part is, if you will see, that's a STB, Surface Transportation Board, status update dated July 11th, 2014. That's what was presented to the STB. And I understand from talking to Brian recently that your office did get directions to be able to download materials from the STB, and I assume you probably have this information already. But if you don't, it's here for you. Let me just highlight a few things in Brian's letter. As you know, that we've had a backlog of grain car orders, and that peaked, according to the letter, at 8,000 in March of this year. They've been steadily coming down in recent weeks, and we're at 2,399 on July 31st. Now, a past due order is something that's more than 4 days, I believe they're defining it, although I've seen some references to 3 days, so it might be 4 days or more. But that's, in any event, that's how they calculate a past due order. That was a reduction of 831 from the prior week, and a reduction of 1,423 over a two-week period. As you know, and I think it's particularly true in some of the other states, specifically in Minnesota, the heavy rains have really played havoc, as this year has been a bad year for weather with the cold and the snow that has interfered, you know, with the entire grid. As you remember, in April, we probably talked about what the snow and cold has done to shipments and all across the board in North Dakota. And, you know, Burlington Northern's in 32 states, a hub such as Chicago, when that's, you know, paralyzed through a number of months in the wintertime, I mean, that was a bad, bad deal. And every railroad is still recovering, I think, from those kinds of weather strains. What have we been doing? I remember some months ago we talked about BNSF's budget for this year, and they had set aside $5 billion for the system for capital improvements, not only for replacement of track and some double track that we're doing in the northern corridor through North Dakota from Minot West, but also for additional employees. There's a whole amount of money that was delegated to purchase of new locomotives, And I think 5,000 cars, including grain cars, was also part of the expansion effort by BNSF. So I think that, at least monetarily, there's been a huge capital commitment. And I can't tell you the precise dollar figure as to how much of that $5 billion would touch North Dakota, but it's a lot. And North Dakota has been a primary focus from where I sit, and I think from where you sit, too, in terms of capital expenditures in the state. There's been a lot of employees that have been hired here. There's a lot of, like I said, improvements going on, expansions going on, sidings being constructed, and so forth. So a lot of that money has been spent
here. You don't mind me just jumping in, questioner. So the, and as Commissioner Crispin set up, that you know we hear a lot out there when we're out in the ground, if you will. And that's what I've heard from the BN. There's a lot of work going on out there. There's new folks that have been hired in different venues. So it does appear the needle is going the right way from everything that I'm hearing on the BN. Two questions. One is the same way that you're able to figure out, the BNSF is able to figure out past due for ag cars, can you have those same kind of numbers put together for past due for coal cars and past due for oil shipments and past due for ethanol shipments? Because to be honest with you, to me, that's like the one question that I really need answered as I make a determination. My recommendation to my colleagues would be if there is a further role in litigation for the North Dakota Public Service Commission. In my mind, if ag is being treated the same as oil, is being treated ethanol, and so on, well, then we just have a challenge of we need more track, we need more people, we need more efficiency. Mm-hmm. If there is a conscious decision by the railroad to pick winners and losers, that's the part that I would be most concerned about.
I've been instructed to find out what you want and to go back with those requests. So I will take those requests
back. I think that's just the same way you're able
to. You might want to add intermodal on that as well. I don't know.
For sure, the ones I think about the most are the ones that directly affect the jurisdiction that the Public Service Commission has. When we have coal shipments that can't make it on time, that, of course, affects electricity generation, which is right in our wheelhouse. And so that's the one that I think that maybe is getting left out of this sometimes is how much challenges we're missing with not having the coal in the places we need to. And, of course, we move a lot of ethanol around the state. But that's the part for me is, and don't give me 20 pages of charts and graphs, just a simple paragraph like you did right here that makes sense that you can say what the past due is for the other types of commodities. Yeah. And I understand they're going to be different, too, because there's a lot of discussion about the cars for oil, and each one will have a little bit of nuance difference. I understand that. But I think it'd be very helpful to know where we're at with those other commodities.
Of course, on the safety side, you're also aware that BNSF has broke precedent and has called for the purchase of 5,000 high-integrity tanker cars for transport of oil.
Absolutely. And just today, for John, going back to your associates, if you will, you know, the safety, I'm looking for the strict review, I think, of what the Public Service Commission's jurisdiction is, the part about shippers being treated the same. The other issues are very important, but that, I think, is clearly in our jurisdiction, and then we'll go from there. So
I'll take that back.
And then
one interesting note, and I just told somebody here from the other industry and coal, but Brian told me that from their calculations, and this might be of interest to you, that the coal train sets have increased astronomically this past year because of the demand for coal.
Absolutely. We've heard that from the electricity companies as well because they over-reliance on natural gas. All of a sudden, gas price spikes, so they go back to coal, which Commissioner Crispin talks about all the time.
So they're really behind on getting those stockpiles built up for the winter. And I was told this statistic that might be of interest to you, that as many coal sets are in the increase over what the baseline was, that's larger than the total amount of oil transport that BNSF has. So, I mean, that was kind of an interesting figure for me to listen to.
Do you have a projection that you're going to share later in your presentation about we think we're going to be caught up by?
Yeah, let's go to that. So Sweeney sends his regards, and we'll end with him. Next page should be the 2014 grain orders update. And you will note that line in the system for North Dakota. And it speaks for itself. I don't know how much I can embellish on that, but you'll note that the past dues as of 7/24, where the 3,359, they had 68 stations. I assume that's, you know, grain handling facilities and that kind of thing. Average days of late was 23.6. They had new past dues added, of course, and new orders of 189, and orders filled 1166. So I think that's what probably gets you to that figure that I said where we are currently with the past dues. The next is,
you know, when I look back to, I'm trying to see the date on this, in that late April time frame when we were here before.
Yes.
It looks like the cars were about 7,000, so that's been about cut in half. But by now the projection was for late July to be at zero. The days late has hardly moved on the dial. It was, I mean, there's not a line across here, so I can't read it down to the 10th or something, but it looks like about maybe 25 days late, and you know, now we're down to 23.6, and it was supposed to be down to zero. So on one, we've moved the dial some, but nowhere near the goal.
Well,
and the other, we really haven't even moved the dial significantly.
We've moved the dial substantially on the number of cars.
Right.
We haven't probably moved the dial so much on the number of days late, because those continue to compile. You know, I mean, for every car that's late, it's still running late until it's filled. So,
John,
I'm not sure that's...
Isn't it fair to assume, though, that, okay, there's just more stuff going on the railroads? I mean, there's, until the track is completed, until the crews are in place, until the engines are out there, it's not going to get to zero. I mean, I think, to me, that's an assumption that I would make, but it seems plausible that we just, there's, you know, the corn, the change from the traditional ag production to more corn has put stress on it. We've got more ethanol out there, we've got more oil out there, and just more commodities. So I think that, to me, not saying I don't trust those numbers of zero, it looks like in the fall, but I think it's when those tracks get completed that maybe we get to realistically zero to hold that line. That just seems plausible.
Well, that affects a lot of things. That even affects speed, you know, and so speed is a big consideration. Not the fact that they're going faster down the track, but that they're able to move all the time. So you don't have what they call a dwell time where they're sitting in some siding someplace.
And I'm breaking it down into a very simple kind of thing, but when I want to hire a contractor to do something at my home, if they can't get to it, they tell me that and say, I can't get to it. Does the railroad ever say to a new prospective customer or someone that wants to add something, no, I can't add anything, I'm too far behind on what we already have?
I don't know if they do that, Commissioner. I'll see John Long in a few days. I'll ask him. John Long, as you know, is the ombudsman here, and so he's on top of the operational front all the time. And so I think, you know, that's something that he could probably address, because I think that, you know, the railroad, from what I know, they've been transparent. And I don't know if they've led anybody to believe that there's going to be a car there at a certain time if that's uncertain. So... The next one is that forecast, I think, that you both were looking at. And that's for the past due cars. It looks like, you know, we're at that point on the graph where we're even down into the red now with from the time that this graph was prepared. So as of August 7/14, we're, you know, at that point. And you'll see where it kind of levels off at the bottom there, and I don't see a forecast where there is no more past due, but at least that's what the short range future is telling us.
Is there predictability now? Even though we're past due, can you still have good predictability for the farmers that they know when the things are going to be moving? Even though we're behind, can you still have a good feel for what's going to be?
I think they're getting a handle on it, Commissioner. I'm not sure how reliant that predictability is when you have certain weather events that occur. But yeah, I think that they would have predictability if all things being normal. Is there anything else that I can get you on this forecast?
John, do you have a reasonable time that you could provide that information? Because, you know, the commission, we've all met, and we've got what we think is a game plan how to deal with this by railroads. And like I said, it may involve litigation. But the clock is ticking. And so, you know, what's the soonest you think you could provide those documents back to us?
I don't know, but I'll ask them to provide them as soon as possible.
Maybe I should rephrase the question then. How about we ask for it in no more than 30 days, and if that's unreasonable, you'll tell us. If that's, Commissioner Christman, if that sounds reasonable to you, or we think 14 days. I mean, I think I want to get something on the record here today that says this is what we asked for, and then you to come back and say that's unreasonable, but here's what is reasonable, just so it's not an open-ended question.
I think 14 days is not sufficient. I would think that 30 days would be a better date to shoot for.
Okay. And does that sound plausible to you? Or?
I was kind of focusing on a different question, and I lost track of exactly what it was, what thing you were asking for within 30 days.
The delay times for other types of commodities.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
And those commodities, we talked about coal, oil. Were we talking about other commodities like?
Coal, oil, ethanol come to mind immediately for me.
Okay.
Because there's really no other alternative for those. You know, you intermodal, you have other alternatives. It's not as cost efficient, but there are other alternatives. Trucks become very expensive. But how about we go 21 days, John? Let's split the difference. 21 days, that's be the official request. If you can't make 21 days, then send us a letter telling us why you can't make 21 days, and then we'll adjust.
I'm a messenger. It's easy.
I understand.
Easy to say yes to anything here.
Lana, does that sound reasonable from my general counsel viewpoint? Okay. Thank you, John.
Okay, now I want to bounce to something else.
Absolutely. All right.
Looking at this past due forecast.
Yes.
It catches my attention, even though, I mean, it's a big graph where we're talking about 2,000 increments of 2,000 cars. And so maybe I'm not reading this entirely right, but it looks to me like as of now, the goal is to get to around a level of 2,000 cars past due. And when I look at the one that was handed out a few months ago, the goal seemed to be to get to zero past due by July 26th. Now, I know zero is a pretty precise and low number, and that can change from day to day just with some kind of a delay on the track or something like that. But 2,000 is quite a bit more than zero. So is there a new line of thinking in what is achievable or reasonable? Because I don't know that 2,000 past due cars is a very strong goal. I can see it being a few hundred, you know, where two or three unit trains have gotten delayed weather event.
But I guess it's how you get underneath those figures. I mean, if it's and I'm talking about a subject that I don't really have any statistics to give to you at this point, but I would think that, you know, effects of delays, as we talked about the other average of 23.5, I mean, if that average comes down to 6 days or 8 days or something like that with 2,000 cars, I mean, that's a lot different story.
I mean, I think the big part of the question is there a change in thinking on behalf of the railroad now between when they once seemed to be graphing things out and shooting for getting being caught up,
let's find that
and
out.
Now it seems that they're only trying to get within a couple thousand cars.
Let's find that out. I'll ask that question.
You know, John, I know you're in an interesting scenario here, but there is a point where the Public Service Commission just moves forward without feedback from the BNSF. We just say we're going to litigate. And then what we'll be asking for won't be in the context of sitting at this table. And so that needs to get back to the people. Because the BNSF's a big company. You know, so they could have brought some of their tech experts up here to support you, too. I understand their boss is in Fargo, but they could have had some technical support with you today. For what it's worth.
Well, if you're threatening litigation,
I'm not threatening litigation.
Take that back to them too.
I'm not threatening litigation.
Those are pay grades far, far higher than
mine. I'm just saying is that there's a point where We keep asking for information, and it keeps delaying. But we have to make decisions. The fall harvest is coming. And it's just, back to Commissioner Crispin's point, what is the new norm? We don't have a lot of tools in our toolkit anymore, and that's the last thing we have. So,
well, you know, I respect that.
And we were here in April.
I understand.
And so it wasn't like this is...
I respect that, but let me tell you this from the bottom of my heart.
That's what we're having a good discussion.
That's right. We're spending a lot of money in this state trying to catch up, trying to expand the system, trying to expand the number of employees, trying to address these shortfalls that we've seen. And we're doing it with weather events and with a lot of things that have happened that we had no control over. So we're doing a good job in bringing this system into the 21st century in terms of what improvements we need in North Dakota to handle a whole lot of commodities that we didn't have a few short years ago.
Right.
So,
and I'll give you that, John. That's the me. I really
I want to cut our company some slack here that we're doing as much as we can, as fast as we can, and we'll continue to do that.
What I go
and litigation isn't going to solve that.
What I go back to is I do appreciate the investment. I appreciate all the work that's being done. But there's still that very single question of, as we close this gap, to make sure that oil and ag and coal and ethanol are all being treated the same. That, to me, is just a very single question, because I do appreciate all the investment. And like I talked about in my previous comments, I believe the answer is, once the investment is completed, you've got the right number of tracks in the ground, we've got everything put into place, designing a system that meets the current needs. We need to build more pipelines in this state to get some of the pressure off the oil trains. And so it's a whole lot of different things. But that single question of making sure that while we're in this developing our new what the infrastructure needs, that everyone is being treated fairly. So that's a very unique question. So I do say thank you to the company for the investment, but that's the one question that I've got to get answered. And so the quicker you get back to me and say, Brian, we're going through this investment, here's what we're going on, we're doing the best we can, that shows some data that everybody's in the same boat, I'm happy.
Yeah, well, all I can tell you is that if you're on BNSF's end answering the phone, you're getting calls from coal and oil and probably ethanol. I don't know that for sure, but you're getting calls from them too about the delays.
Right.
So the pressure's been on the system from all elements of commodities.
Good discussion, John.
All right. Let's go to that next one, past due aging report. I don't know if this is going to add anything, but you can see the days passed. And on the past dues, what the numbers look like. And this is for the entire system. So I suppose that's where you get your averages on the system. We're at North Dakota's at, what, 23.6, I think, on that other graph.
So what usually happens, how does it get to be a month and a half or 2 months or more late? Is that usually when a track is washed out somewhere or something like that? Or
I'm not the right one to ask that, okay. Commissioner, but I assume it has everything to do with, you know, priorities and availability of cars and locomotives and who's in line next and so forth and so on. So there's a whole complex network that's governing this thing. And the next is the report, if you want to get into that, the report that was given to the Surface Transportation Board on July 11th. And I assume that baseline on that first page on the dashboard on the service metrics, I assume that baseline is from a time period earlier this year. And so the increases that you see are from that time period. And everything, in, you know, looks like it's in a positive domain, except for the speed, I suppose, if that's an indication of what's happened to the system in terms of average speed. That next one, they have regions submitted. We're in the north region. and the AAR dwell. These are numbers from the American Association of Railroads. So the dwell time is the time that that train sits in the terminal or stops along the way. I assume that's probably for fuel stops. I'm not sure that includes siding stops or anything like that. It might do that too.
John, do you know how much the changes in, this is from memory, what I want to use the term drivers, but the folks that drive the trains, what the hours of their work hours, that has been changed recently, what they can work?
I don't know that, Commissioner. I do know that they had some terrible times in the cold of winter where they had to make sure that they weren't outside for a longer period of time than whatever it was, 20 minutes, and they had to come in to warm up. And so those are the things that really affected the workforce. But that's pretty well regulated at the federal level, too.
I read somewhere where there's some changes out there that reduce the amount of time that the crews can be available, which further makes a bigger challenge hiring more people.
Right. I don't know. I haven't done a spot on comparison between the North region as among the other regions.
Well, I think part of it, that's why it's good discussion today, John, is that, you know, we can help get the message out of what's going on if we know exactly what's going on. I mean, the best analogy I can use is the Public Service Commission has almost zero jurisdiction on wireless carriers. But we know what AT&T and Verizon are up to in their build-out plan. We can help educate the mayors and local people what's going on. So the more we know from BNSF, the better we can help get the word out what's going on.
Right. Well, so I appreciate that. And let me tell you this. I've been with the railroad for quite a few years now, and I've never seen so much presence of the CEO and the other VPs out of Fort Worth than I have in the past few years, especially this year. I mean, this focus on this system, I guarantee you, is in North Dakota. I mean, this is a big part of the system that they want to fix and address these problems.
When I've said this to the ag producers in many different times is that when I grew up in the 80s that, and beyond that, we were losing rail service in the state. There used to be railroads west of Bottineau. Those are long since gone. And so as we go through this build-out, this in the long term is going to be very, very good for ag producers because the infrastructure that we have is getting updated, it's getting improved. So the end state of our rail for ag at the end of this build-out is going to be much better than it ever was 10 years ago. It's just how quick can we get to what the new norm is.
Of course, you add to this, too, the normal problems that, you know, are there no matter what the development is in the state. Normal repairs require crossings to be repaired, and those crossings are closed for a period of time. Farmers can't get to their fields. So, I mean, we're trying to stay on top of all of that, too. This isn't a whining session for the railroad. I'm just telling you.
But it's good discussion.
There's a lot of stuff going on in this system. And when you spend that kind of money in the state, there's just a lot of activity. The next one's an interesting one. That's the people that has been hired in the system. I don't have the exact number of the people that were hired in North Dakota, but there were quite a few, and I think that was presented last April. But I assume that has increased somewhat, and I think we're almost at that 5,000 number. The acquisitions, you can see where we are on that, on the car acquisitions, locomotive acquisitions. They had projected 500 this year, and they're already at 389. The expansion capital and the replacement and maintenance. And those questions that you've raised in terms of fairness and addressing the needs of the various shippers in the state, those are questions that are of concern to the Surface Transportation Board as well. So, I mean, those meetings are going on there, and those questions are being answered there. So, I mean, the railroad has a responsibility beyond here. I mean, they're addressing those concerns, I'm sure, with the STB.
Well, it's just that then we can have the information to pass it along as appropriate. And it's just that easy, I think, communication. So we can talk to the Dave Fiebiger, head of the grain dealers, and Stu out there, so they get from us the same thing they're getting from you. We understand what's going on in the field.
Yeah. Well, I'll try to get you as much information as I can. The next one is the, I think that's the tie and yard and engineering folks, and you can see where the goals were compared to where the actuals are into July. It looks to me like July was right on what our actuals were in terms of the projections. And then the north is cut out separately. So they're the hired and trained employees for the North Corridor, which is us. Next graph is what we're spending at, on the capacity and reliability, replacement and maintenance capital. That's for the system. Like I said, a lot of that is going into North Dakota. There it is, North Dakota capacity and reliability right there. In June, we exceeded. Looks like the July figures aren't in yet on this graph. But I think look, it's interesting that every projection was exceeded in North Dakota in terms of dollars.
And this is dollars on?
Replacement and maintenance.
Okay.
And then the next one is expansion and efficiency capital, and I think that's where you'd find the new sidings, the new double track. And by and large, I think we've been exceeding there too. Now, one thing I was told, there is some holdup on construction, and the holdup is because of the Corps of Engineers' delays in granting permits in wetlands. And that's become a problem. So I'd like you to take note of that.
Well, we've seen that in pipelines that we've approved contingent upon Corps of Engineer approval. That
then you're familiar with that.
John, could at some point, no particular time frame, but the for this one, when you talk about expansion and efficiency, it'd be nice to get a almost like a map that shows where the plan to double track is that. I mean, I've heard, you know, the Northwest. Is that the whole run? Is that around the certain
between
areas?
Between Minot and Poplar, from what I've been told, primarily.
And where is Poplar at?
That's, I don't know how many miles it is into eastern Montana.
Oh, okay, so it's a Montana.
It's in Montana.
So it's the whole North Dakota line then, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's easy. I don't need a graph of that if that's what it is.
You want an expansion and map of installations.
That would be nice just to look at, I think,
okay.
For North Dakota.
Of expansion and of other construction sites, too, or what? I imagine they would have everything.
I would think where the investment is going and
okay.
Plan to go.
All right.
And that's more of an awareness kind of thing than anything.
Sure. I know that Hillsborough and Devil's Lake were cited for the sightings.
Randy, do you have any more questions for BNSF, if you will?
Well, kind of some thoughts, and then you can respond or take them back to Brian or someone else. Not this Brian. You've mentioned a number of times the amount of money being spent here, and it is a lot, no doubt about it. However, since we're not able to get all of our questions answered, and I don't know how much money, how much revenue BNSF takes out of North Dakota. In perspective, I guess I don't know that it is, it seems like a lot, but I can't really justify to one of your upset customers that it's a lot, because I don't know based on what, you know, if it's sort of like a city thinks the county spends so much money on their roads, and the counties think the state spends so much money on their roads, and in perspective, it may or may not be that much compared to what they have responsibility for. So just the dollars spent without all the other information maybe isn't as useful as I originally thought when last winter when I heard the amount that was intended to be spent here. You mentioned that you were asked to find out just what information it is that we want, and this goes back to what I mentioned before. In May, we requested some information. A quote out of Mr. Sweeney's letter is that the commission's information requests represent precisely the kind of burdensome and inconsistent state regulatory efforts that the ICCTA was designed to preempt. He couldn't have been more clear that he just wants us to get lost and not bother him. And so us really working the system and finding out exactly what information it is we need to better understand the problems and the potential solutions and the long-term implications doesn't do much good if we're going to whittle all that down into a real detailed request for information and be told to get lost. And so
those are lawyers' diplomatic terms, so I don't mean to belittle it, but I mean, I think that, you know, the company is guided by what they believe they have in their file, what they can access and so forth and distribute. Not saying that you don't have a right to complain. I'm just saying that that's the decision that the company has made.
I will point out the National Grain and Feed Association requested what seems like somewhat similar, although they were looking state by state, and so it would be for more states. But I think a lot of the same information, and I don't know now if that is some or none or all of that is being provided to the folks in Washington. I need to follow up, and I wasn't aware of their request until yesterday, so I don't know how well that's being followed up on. But that's really the frustration, again, going back to my opening comments. Your customers complain to us, and if BNSF and CP won't provide us the information that we need in order to explain back, then their complaints are about all we have to go on. And their complaints are that we sit here and we maybe have a train that is completely full, and we worked overtime to get it done within the time period that the railroad needed it loaded by in order to, and I don't know, we've had this back and forth, whether it's get the discount or not have to pay a penalty or whatever. They're supposed to get it loaded within a certain time, and a week later the train is still sitting there full, but in the meantime they have back orders and all they see is trains of other commodities going by. I can understand their frustration, and if BNSF and CP don't provide me all the information that I ask for, I can't very well explain to them a good explanation of why what is happening is happening.
Okay. I just have a response to the money part of it. I'm not here to say that we're spending all this money to impress anybody. I'm just saying that we're spending all this money to address problems in the system and to make it better in North Dakota. And I'm just saying that, suggesting that that was a huge commitment by BNSF in North Dakota. And hopefully it'll resolve in some very good, productive results.
Okay. Anything else, Commissioner?
Nope.
Okay, how does this sound? Let's almost 10 minutes to 2. Steve, if we could... actually, John, do you have any closing comments?
I guess I do have.
Okay.
It's the responsibility here to get the information and to battle away and work at getting that and trying to make the system better. I do appreciate you taking the time to come in here and you know, knowing that the details of running the whole railroad are not your specialty, to come in and provide the information that you're able and to take back our requests to them. So thank you for doing that, John.
You're welcome, and I want to thank both of you commissioners for the time you've given me, and it was a good discussion. This is a state where, you know, we have great government leaders, and we can always sit down at the table and discuss these issues, and I hope that continues. I mean, I think that, you know, there's some quirks here that we got to work out in terms of exchanging information. We'll try to work on those and get that information to you. But I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
Okay. Well, thank you, John, for your time today. If we could, let's just, Steve, you could stop the tape here.